Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. I hope you're happy to come in today on this nice warm day, and it looks like it's going to get warmer and warmer for a while, so I find that something to look forward to. My name is Kathy Gorski. I am today's representative from the church board. I have several announcements to make about church life and activities. There is also on your order of service a list of a calendar of upcoming events and information on other events that I encourage you to take your order of service home with you. Surprisingly, I only see an announcement that I myself brought today, so I don't know what that means, but that's the only announcement I have, and I'll be brief because Lynn wants to add to one of the items. I just wanted to mention three upcoming events. One is a leadership workshop at Church West on the 24th of March that Lynn's going to talk more about. The second is the district assembly that is coming up on April 27th through 29th. And I have more brochures for this. It's taking place in Oak Brook, Illinois. And at least two people from the congregation are going already, and we're hoping that more will attend, and you can share hotel rooms, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, that's coming up. And then the third event is the General Assembly of the UUA that's taking place in Phoenix, and you can go to the UUA website for that information. So, Lynn, you want to talk a bit more about the Church West event?
Good morning. I think everyone here is or has the potential to be a leader here at church, and leadership is really important to keep our congregation vital. And I'm excited that Church West, along with our Central Midwest District, is putting on this workshop. It's called Leadership from the Head and Heart. And it, what does it mean to be a leader? How can we find more opportunities to minister? And how do we bring shared ministry to life? I think it's going to be a really exciting workshop. I plan on going, and I'd like to fill my van with six others at least to join me. It's coming up 2 weeks from yesterday on a Saturday, 8:30 to 2:30. $10, lunch is included. I think we probably have money in our budget if we need it. But anyway, if anyone's interested, I've got some flyers. We could sign up and mail them all in together. So please see me after the service if you're interested. Thanks.
And leadership development is one of our priorities for the year, too.
I now invite you to greet those around you. Hi, Ginger. If you are visiting us today, we particularly welcome you. Please sign the guest ledger on the visitor's table in the foyer. You will find a variety of information on that table about our church and about Unitarian Universalism. Help yourself to anything that is of interest to you. After the service, we encourage visitors to grab a cup of coffee, join several representatives from the church and our minister, Reverend Hobart, in his office to chat, answer any questions you may have, and get to know each other. If you are a visitor and feel comfortable standing up and giving your name, we will warmly welcome you. If you've brought a visitor and want to stand up and introduce them, now would be a good time too. Anyone who would like to mention that you're here as a visitor? Welcome. Okay, if you are visiting us with your children, it's our custom for the children to remain with us until after the story for all ages, at which time the children depart for their religious education classes. Your child is welcome to join them or to remain in the service. If you would like to go to observe the class, that is fine too. If you need nursery care, outside the store across the foyer is the nursery for younger children. RE classes end at 11:15, at which time you can pick up your children. Let's see. Of course, everyone is invited to the social hall after the service for coffee. Quick reminder to put your cell phones on silent mode. We do this specifically for Jim. And I hope you find this morning service rewarding and inspiring. Thank you.
In the many meanings of this hour, let us gather together for worship. Let us bring our offerings of memories past and our aspirations for what is yet to come. Let us bring gratitude for what we have been and done together and recognition of what we can no longer be. Let us bring joy in knowing one another, and let us share sadness that our paths sometimes take us apart. May we remember that beloved community has no street address. It is not a point on the map of our lives. May we remember that it comes into being as our lives meet and mingle and merge. May we remember it is created again and yet again, and that we are its creators wherever we may be. In the many meanings of this hour, let us celebrate life. It is ours to share and to remember. In this time and this place, let us treasure this time. Let us seize this moment for it will not come again. And in this spirit this morning, we light our chalice. Our opening hymn is number 345, "With Joy We Claim the Growing Light." I invite you to rise in body or in spirit. Our congregational ingathering is number 650 in the back of the hymn book. Cherish your doubts, for doubt is the attendant of truth. A belief which may not be questioned binds us to error, for there is incompleteness and imperfection in every belief. Let no one fear for the truth, that doubt may consume it, for doubt is a testing of belief. For truth, if it is truth, arises from each testing stronger, more secure. But those who fear not doubt and know its use are founded on rock. Therefore, let us not fear doubt, but let us rejoice in its help. Well, it's now time for our story. And I invite those who are youthful, either in age or in spirit, to join us here at the front. Do we have someone to carry our lantern this morning? Okay. And those of us who are going to religious education will follow the lantern and the lantern carrier. Well, now, this is a funny question, I think. How is religion like ice cream and football? Well, it's an interesting question, and now we're going to find out if it has an interesting answer. Football. Well, football is a game that some people play, and it's a game that some of the others of us like to watch. Some of you here probably watch and cheer for the Green Bay Packers. Anybody here a Green Bay Packer fan? Yeah? Anybody here a fan of another team in the National Football League? Which one?
Bears.
The Bears. That's a sad story. I'm a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, so I smile a lot. Well, that's football. It's a game. Ice cream. Well, we all know what ice cream is. It's a dessert. And most people like ice cream, right? Anybody here like ice cream? Yeah, sure. Anybody here not like ice cream? Well, if they didn't, that would be okay. Well, people like different flavors of ice cream. What's your favorite flavor? Yeah. Vanilla, I heard. Yeah. Lemon ice cream. Chocolate chip ice cream. Well, what about strawberry? Does anybody here like strawberry? Yeah. So you see, we all like ice cream, it seems. Nobody said they didn't like ice cream, but maybe our favorite flavor is different from somebody else's favorite flavor. And that's okay. And it would really be okay if somebody didn't like ice cream at all. Now, religion. What can we say about religion? Well, one thing we can say is that there are lots of different religions. And probably you know people who are Roman Catholic or Lutherans. Maybe some of you used to be Roman Catholic or Lutherans, and maybe some of you still are. Or maybe Methodists or Presbyterians or Congregationalists or Quakers. And then, of course, there are people who are Jewish and Hindu and Muslim and Buddhist. I mean, I could spend the rest of the morning naming all the religions of the world. There are so many, but I'm not going to do that. But there is one more that I do want to mention. Which one do you think that is? Unitarian. Boy, you people are smart. Unitarian Universalists. Anybody here a Unitarian Universalist? Yeah, okay. Well, so we know what football game is. It's a game. And we know what ice cream is. It's a dessert. And we know that there are lots of different religions and that each of those religions has its own beliefs and ways of doing things. But how are they alike, football and ice cream and religion? Does anyone here think that they know the answer to that question? Yeah. Okay, you can choose which ice cream you like. You can choose which football team you like. You can choose which religion you like. In fact, you can even choose that you don't like football and ice cream and religion. And that's okay, too. But thank you very much. Actually, that's what I was going to say. I think that religion is like ice cream and football because everyone does not agree about any of them. And some like one and some like another. But does that mean that because I like the Pittsburgh Steelers and you like the Green Bay Packers, that it's better to like the Green Bay Packers or the Pittsburgh Steelers? Some people say yes, it is. I can tell there's some football fanatics here. Okay, and I think we would all agree, however, that when we're talking about ice cream, that it's okay to like different flavors. We don't have to all like the same flavor. And when we come to religion, do we think that being a Unitarian Universalist is better than being of another religion? Or do you think that's a good choice for us and that for other people they may make a different choice? Well, I think that gets at how religion and ice cream and football are alike, because it's just fine to choose the one that you want. And here in the United States, the American Constitution guarantees everyone the right to their religious opinion and guarantees the right of people with the same religious opinions to come together to make their own religious community like we do here. And that's why we can come together here at this church, and others can come together at their church or their synagogue or their temple or mosque, or they can choose not to come to any religious community. So the next time someone says to you that their religion is better than yours, remember to say something like this: that is a matter of religious opinion. And in our country, everyone is entitled to his or her opinion. And I don't think that your religion is better than mine, or that mine is better than yours. You like your religion, I like mine, and I think that is just fine. Well, that's our story for this morning. And if lantern carrier will come forward. I'm forgetting the number of this hymn, if anybody wants to. 414. If you want to follow it in the book, it's number 414. Where is the lantern? Here it is.
Now it is time in our service where we invite you to share your joys and concerns. If you'd like to share, please raise your hand and state your name and your joy and concern, or concern, and I will light a candle to commemorate that. And I will begin by lighting our first candle in memory and in good thoughts of all the strife and problems there are in the world today.
Morning, my name is Josh. I have a joy. I'm in school full time, working and everything, and I got a 4.0 last semester, and kind of well on my way this semester, and got accepted to the National Technical Honor Society.
Congratulations.
I have a concern for the homeless and the hungry throughout the world.
I have a joy just hearing Jim say this morning that community is wherever you find it. I went to Madison for a two-day yoga session Friday and Saturday, and found there were several people I knew there, and it was just surprising to me to just find this community there, and then it was a joy to come back today and find this community here.
candle of concern for just all the sadness these last 10 days in our Arrowhead community with the loss of two very special young people.
My name's Lynn. A candle of joy for this community that helped my husband Phil at our church retreat create 7 bookshelves for the Hope Center in Waukesha. And they were delivered yesterday. We'll post a picture. They were thrilled to have them.
Good morning. My name's Will. A candle of joy, I'll say, to commemorate the outpouring of love for a couple of families that were stricken with a terrible loss of their son this last week.
A candle of joy. I just returned straight from chaperoning 6 of our youth at a area youth con, and it's just one of those things that I kind of walk into going, no, why did I sign up for this again? And then I leave remembering that these youth just create this amazing community together, and the whole way home they were all just talking about, oh, I love our religion, I love our church, and how can we bring that more to the world? And so just gave me feeling really good.
Candle of joy for the nurturing of this entire community. I don't think there's any one of us who has or could have a situation where they need support. And it wouldn't just come. So a candle of joy for the values and the sharing and the nurturing from all of us to each other.
Hi, my name is Kirsten. I have a concern. My community is part of the Milwaukee Public Museum. I've worked with the curatorial staff for many years, and as of April 15th, all of the senior staff have been given retirement packages, which include the entire curatorial staff of the Milwaukee Public Museum. It's a lost community for not only me, but the whole Milwaukee community and us.
And I'll light one final candle for all the joys and concerns we choose to keep in our hearts.
Let us join together in a time of meditation and reflection and prayer. Spirit of life, infuse us with simple humanity. Let compassion take hold of us. Let love be the law of our hearts. When tragedy engulfs us, when troubles plague our every step, when turmoil erupts in us, may we be surprised to find the strength of spirit that we may have forgotten. When the world makes no sense, when those on whom we counted disappoint, when suffering becomes our routine, let us reach down to deep roots that we have neglected. Here in this house of worship, we are assembled not to solve the mysteries of existence, but to confront them, not to find answers to all of our questions, but to realize that the most profound questions have many answers, or perhaps no answers. Not to put an end to our doubts, but to learn to live with them. Here in this community, we draw on the spirit of the ages, a spirit that sustained those who have come before, people who were troubled as we are troubled, and yet who found in themselves strength to persevere and would not let the spirit die. Spirit of cosmos and time, spirit of humanity and history, spirit of love and justice, spirit of pity and compassion, inhabit us in this our time of need. And now in silence, let us each continue in the spirit of meditation and reflection and prayer. Amen. Our hymn is number 124, Be That Guide. I invite you to rise in body or in spirit.
Help us, you.
Today's reading is from John Milton of Areopagitica. Our faith and knowledge thrives by exercise, as well as our limbs and complexion. Truth is compared in Scripture to a streaming fountain. If her waters flow not in a perpetual progression, they sicken into a muddy pool of conformity and tradition. A man may be a heretic in the truth, and if he believes things only because his pastor says so, or the assembly so determines, without knowing other reasons, though his belief be true, yet the very truth he holds becomes his heresy. There is not any burden that some would gladlier post off to another than the charge and care of their religion.
Well, I confess it's a fortunate thing that I'm an early riser, because guess what? I forgot the time change today. But I had plenty of time because I do rise early. I see that those present must have remembered the time change too. And we will look for those who didn't remember at coffee hour. Perhaps you've seen the bumper sticker that declares, "To question is the answer." Well, certainly that is a response to the bumper sticker which claims, "Christ is the answer." Well, says the questioner, in effect, if Christ is the answer, what is the question? You don't find an answer until you have first framed the question. And this is as true for religion as it is for any other human endeavor. Well, this, at any rate, is the claim of a liberal religious spirit. Begin with critical religious questions. Please don't offer preordained answers. I remember a segment of the Tonight Show during the years that Steve Allen was the host. As I recall, it was entitled "The Question Man." And Steve Allen was the person who played the question man. He was given an answer, and then he had to frame a question that required that answer. And of course, the humor was in the reversal of the usual way of doing things, and of course, as well, in Steve Allen's quick wit. We usually offer answers to questions not the other way around, except, of course, for Steve Allen and those who promote the "Christ is the Answer" bumper stickers, or others who have preordained answers to all the questions of life. Humor has an important place in life, which helps to keep serious matters in perspective. And there is a serious religious matter underlying the humor. Religious toleration for congregations and for individuals. In a time when religious conformity and religious toleration were unresolved and there was civil conflict in England, the English political philosopher John Locke wrote in 1685 a letter on toleration. Hear his important words on this important topic. Locke wrote, "No man by nature is bound to any particular church and sect, but everyone joins himself," and we would add herself, "voluntarily to that society in which he believes he has found that profession and worship which is truly acceptable to God. No way whatsoever that I shall walk in, if it is against the dictates of my conscience, will ever bring me to the mansions of the blessed. I may grow rich by an art I take no delight in. I may be cured of some disease by remedies that I have no faith in, but I cannot be saved by a religion that I distrust and by a worship that I abhor. In vain, therefore, do princes compel their subjects to come into their church communion under pretense of saving their souls. To be left to our own consciences is to be given the religious freedom to question all religious answers until we discover a place, and it may be inside or it may be outside a religious community, that is compatible with our conscience and our intellect. We can assume that the person who affirms to question is the answer must be a person compatible with the liberal religious spirit, whether or not she or he consider this a religious affirmation. Indeed, this person will consider it an anti-religious statement if he or she assumes that questioning is not inherent to religion. We can only hope that the questioner of predetermined answers discovers, as we have, that there is a religion, liberal religion, that begins with questions. Questions that may very well have more than one answer, or perhaps questions that finally have no answer at all. I'm reminded of a couple of humorous stories about religious questions. Have you heard about the Unitarian Universalist who discovered a question mark burning in his front yard? I don't think any Unitarian Universalist requires an explanation of the meaning of this story. We may not have found a question mark burning in our yard, but we have experienced the burning puzzlement of a friend or a family member or some total stranger when we respond to their question, "What do Unitarian Universalists believe anyway?" The second story is not about Unitarians. It goes like this. A Jew is asked, "Why do you Jews always answer a question with another question?" And he replies, "Why not?" I think the same attitude applies to we who are Unitarian Universalists. Like Judaism, our religion is not first concerned about answers, but about questions. Why not? Or burning question marks? Or to question is the answer. I think there are both personal reasons and historic reasons why Unitarian Universalists, and we need to add along with other religious liberals and free-thinking people of any or no religious connection, begin with questions and question answers. Many of us have come to Unitarian Universalist congregations from religious traditions that did not allow questions or allowed questions only within certain set limits. And at some point in our developing life, we raised questions about the accepted answers, about the creed or the dogma or the tradition or the authority of the priest or the church or the scripture. In short, we question the right answer to the question, and we ask, why? Well, we said, "I'm sorry, but I can't believe that anymore." Or we said, "I've got a different interpretation of that scripture." Or we said, "This religious answer is not compatible with a free and open inquiry into the subject." Or we said, "Why do I have to accept the answer that the leader tells me is the one and only answer to the question?" In that personal question, we reenacted the experience of many people over the generations and the ages who have questioned the accepted answers, the official answers to important religious questions. Historically, an investigation reveals that in the early Christian church, there were many perspectives and opinions concerning God and Jesus and human nature and creation and the sacraments and church organization and immortality and a host of other religious issues. But then over time, the developing church came to accept one official position, an orthodox position which excluded all those who did not accept it. And the one official position was enforced not only by the church, but by the government as well, making the questioner not only a religious heretic, but a political criminal. And these heretics and criminals were sent into exile, or they were imprisoned, and they were often executed for their religious apostasy and criminal behavior. Beginning in the 15th century in Europe, after hundreds of years of enforced uniformity in religion, the questioners began to assert themselves. And they ask why. They questioned the accepted answers. They insisted on their right to hold religious perspectives and opinions that were consistent with what their intellects and their consciences convinced them were true. We have already mentioned John Locke's position on religious tolerance and the freedom to question all religious answers. Another central figure in that ongoing discussion was John Milton. As we heard in 1644, which was 40 years and more before Locke wrote, Milton wrote his seminal work, Areopagitica, and we heard a few of his reflections from that essay, in which he defended the individual's right to question and to forge an answer that was compatible with his or her conscience and intellect. And then Milton went further. He challenged people to enter into religious community dialogue in quest of answers, religious truth, that was shaped by this ongoing interaction with other people. He said in part, and again this comes from Areopagitica, "I cannot praise a fugitive and cloistered virtue, unexercised and unbreathed, that never sallies forth and sees her adversary, but slinks out of the race where the immortal garland is to be run for, not without dust and heat. That which purifies us is trial, and trial is by what is contrary. Our faith and knowledge thrive by exercise as well as our limbs and complexion. We boast our light, but if we look not wisely on the sun itself, it smites us into darkness. The light which we have gained was given us not to be ever staring on, but by it to discover onward things more remote from our knowledge." You know, I think John Milton would have felt very comfortable in this congregation. Or maybe we should say we would have felt comfortable in any congregation that John Milton was part of. In the thoughts and words and actions of Milton and Locke and many others, religious freedom was born, or perhaps we should say it was reborn. Our direct religious forebears, Unitarians and Universalists, were among the free-thinking, nonconformist, dissenting religious people who question the accepted and the enforced answers. And in Transylvania and Poland and England and other countries, they wrote and spoke and lived out religious freedom and sometimes died for it. Their perspectives and ways came to America. And when the United States of America was established as a free, independent, democratic country, religious freedom was written into our Constitution. Our Unitarian and Universalist religious forebears went one step further. Among Unitarians and Universalists alike, they established religious freedom within their churches too, and they affirmed the inherent right of mind and conscience, of everyone's mind and conscience, to ask why. And they defended the position that all answers can be freely questioned. They freely entered together into an agreement, a covenant. They made promises to one another, which holds that the center of their religion is right relationship with one another and right relationship of their congregation with all the world. They maintain that relationships, not dogmatic right answers to the religious questions, that relationship is the center of religion, that ethical behavior, not uniform answers to religious questions, is their bond of union. When today we question answers to religious issues, we are informed both by our history and by our own religious struggles to form and be true to the dictates of our intellect and our consciences, to our minds and our hearts. And we choose to come together in religious community. We gather to join with others in ongoing dialogue and shaping and sharing of our religious life, our individual religious lives, our life together, and our religious life together in the world. Yes, we question answers. We question not only the answers of others, but most important, we question our answers too. And we recognize that all of our answers are tentative and open-ended. In a word, they are partial and finite and fallible. And we make absolutely no claim to a final revelation of truth which stands for all time. However, like everyone else, we do answer, indeed we must answer, life's religious questions. And we say that our liberal religious answers are discovered not so much in the thoughts of our minds or the words of our mouths, but in the way we live out our lives. Yes, we question, for religious questioning is essential to a vital and to a dynamic religious life. We say no to many matters, for there are limits to credibility and there are limits to behavior. And finally, however provisionally, we find our answer to life's religious questions. We cannot do otherwise, for our living itself is our answer. It is our answer. The American poet Wallace Stevens reminds us that we must answer. His poem, "The Well-Dressed Man with a Beard," begins with these lines. After the final no, there comes a yes, and on that yes, the future world depends. We cannot avoid it or escape it. We must answer life's questions with our living. And we will answer yes, finally, to something. The last line of Wallace Stevens' poem concludes, "It can never be satisfied, the mind, never." May our answers be informed always by our restless, unsettled minds, by our empathetic and generous hearts, by our unending gratitude for the gift of life and for all the graces of our lives. These indeed are religious answers worthy of the religious questions. Oh, thank you.
On that note, we would like now to take a few minutes for a polylogue. So if you have some ideas or thoughts or reflections that you'd like to share regarding the sermon today, please raise your hand and our ushers will bring the microphone around. And it'd be nice if you'd state your name and then share with us.
Jim, this is Gus. I was very happy to see you or hear you quote Milton. Sometimes John Milton got a bad name after writing Paradise Lost as being somewhat doctrinaire himself, but in fact he wasn't. There are two philosophers' quotes that came to mind as you were talking. The first one, of course, was Nietzsche, who said that truth is not a quality of a proposition, whether or not a statement is true or false, but truth is rather the ability to launch an attack on my own most deeply held convictions, just to keep myself in line. And I think that's good. And the other one was from Martin Heidegger, who said that questions are called forth by answers. And what he meant by that was that somewhere out there, there is something calling to me to question it, to find out about it. But questions change, and so do the answers. And the answers change just as much as the questions do. So hopefully what we try to do in philosophy anyway is try to come up with simply better questions.
This is Al. Jim, you've presented me with a challenge. If many of you were here last week and spent time listening to the conversation about Buddhism, you may share what I left with, which was to not think. And now here you are this week.
Hi, this is Mary. I really enjoyed the sermon and have to say that questions have gotten me in trouble my entire life. back to high school, I do remember a question authority t-shirt that got me kicked out of school. And institutions, whether they're religious or not, don't care for questions too much. Especially if they're on point. So it's difficult to learn the balance between challenging in a respectful way, asking questions in a way that aren't still compassionate and have an incredible critical underlying message. Anyway, but at the same time, I just so appreciate your message, because so many institutions do have a difficult time with questions or with those who question.
This is John. Thank you, Jim. It made me think the more we learn, the more questions there are, and we realize how little we know. The more we learn, it's almost like the universe. It's just keeps expanding and expanding and expanding, and it's just, I think, one of life's wonders is how much more there is to know, that, and we discover a little more, and we realize there's even more that we don't know, and it just goes on and on endlessly.
I'm Mike, over here. I'm reading the book, What's the Matter with Kansas, and in there they're going through the fundamentalist beliefs of, you know, that they're being persecuted and they're just getting back to the fundamentals of things, and, you know, we shouldn't question because God has put everything in the works and the plans. So, you know, unfortunately we also have an East Coast elite that we would be called East Coast elitists, being that's just enough to dismiss all our philosophies about questioning. Why should question what God wants? Because we know what it is. It's simple for them, and that's what they wanted.
Now, this is Jerry. I'm a little concerned about the analogy of ice cream and religion. That religion is like ice cream. There are many different flavors, and it doesn't matter which one we pick. In light of what we human beings have learned, especially over the last 500 years of observing nature, with the development of tools such as telescopes and radios and things like that, we can observe, have a much better idea of what reality is than what we knew of back 2,000 years ago, when people wrote scriptures about how the universe was created in 6 days, and the earth was created before the sun, and the plants were created before the sun. People should know now, from observation, that certain precepts, certain concepts, just don't pass the test of reality. So we should not be afraid to challenge beliefs that don't fit in with reality. And that's why I like the sermon part where it says, look for truth, ask questions. But no, all religions aren't equal to one another, because some of them just don't pass the test of reality.
I think perhaps it's important to try different kinds of ice cream to be sure that we do have our favorite. I think with all of that, we'll now lead into our offertory. If you are a visitor today, we ask that you know, please know that you are our guest and that you feel no obligation today. Let there be an offering to sustain and strengthen this place, which is sacred to so many of us, a community of memory and of hope, for we are now the keepers of the dream. Thank you.
bear with me. This is my first time up here. So. I was going to tell you my journey to this church and then why I love it so much. My search for religion started with my mother. When I started to question the world and how it related to me in a spiritual way, she told me to explore as many religions as possible. So I explored. I attended a mosque, a Jehovah's Witness meeting, Methodist, Lutheran, Assembly of God, you name it, I probably went to it. I eventually was drawn to a Catholic church, which my dad was not a fan of, but I still did it. I loved it there because they had a great youth choir and a youth group that really appreciated youth, and I really loved it. Eventually, the church administration changed, and they kind of put us aside, so I decided I wasn't wanted there. I was churchless for a long time until Josh and I got together. We decided to start growing our roots, if you want to call it that. Well, after a lot of research, we finally found the religion of Unitarian Universalist, and we loved it. The values were exactly what we believed in. So the closest church was UU Church West. Sadly, that one was a bit huge for us. We kind of got lost in the wash, and we didn't really like it very much because of that fact. I kept searching and searching, and then Josh proposed. And then I officially knew we needed to find a church. So we looked and looked and looked, and finally we found LCUUC. We took a tour, and when I first walked up, I saw this amazing building. It really caught my eye. And then when I walked in, it was so inviting and filled with energy that I couldn't imagine not attending this church. Our first service, we met Al, and funny guy he was. He was very inviting, and he asked us a bunch of questions. But we felt really warm, you know, like it was really warm and inviting, so we came, and we started bringing Ethan to the church. He had a rough start to life, and we wanted him to have a place where he could open up and be himself without ridicule of his different family situation. It's amazing to see the change in him because of the simple yet important lessons that he learns here and the friends that he's made. LCUUC means a lot to me because it's a place where my spirit feels at peace and my mind is open to new ideas. It is also the place that we're going to be having our wedding in May, and I can't fathom having it anywhere else. This church is the congregation are filled with so much energy and experiences, I absorb them as much as I can every time that I'm here.
Thank you for that. I would like you now to join in our congregational affirmation number 671 in the dark blue hymnal. Our faith and knowledge thrive by exercise, as well as our limbs and complexion.
If the waters of truth flow not in a perpetual progression, they sicken into a muddy pool of conformity and tradition.
The light which we have gained was given us not to be ever starring on, but by it to discover onward things more remote from our knowledge. Give me liberty to know, to utter, and to argue freely according to conscience above all liberties. For who knows not that truth is strong next to the Almighty? She needs no policies, no stratagems to make her victorious. And now we ask that you join in our closing hymn, number 300.
We
We receive fragments of holiness, glimpses of eternity, brief moments of insight. Let us gather them up for the precious gifts that they are, and renewed by their grace, move boldly into the unknown. Amen.